constitutional rights, and I'm very concerned about that. I have six additional comments. I know a lot of people here, so I'll try to go through them very quickly. It's my understanding that Dianne Feinstein has a concealed carry weapons permit, so I guess it's okay for her to have her gun, but she doesn't want us to have ours. About 4 weeks ago in El Paso, Texas, there was a movie theater, and a deranged person went in there, and there was an off-duty police officer. He had a gun and was ready to shoot. She drew her weapon and put four slugs into him, and that terminated it with nobody hurt. So there is a good advantage for good people to carry weapons and have the authority to do so. And look at Texas, Florida, some other states where you don't have to have a license to carry a weapon, and look at the crime rates there. And you mentioned Australia and England, just the opposite in Texas and Florida. Very interesting. I just finished with my grandson. I'm a Boy Scout leader in Troop 581, and he's on the Eagle Trail, just 13 years old, only two merit badges out from Eagle, so I'm real proud of him. But we just finished Citizenship in the Nation merit badge, and it's an extensive study, the preamble of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the seven components of the Constitution, and all the other amendments. And we got into detail very much about the First and Second Amendment rights, and it's very, very good training and a real eye-opener to look at the history of that. So if you guys want to go online and look at the Citizenship of the Nation merit badge, it's very appropriate what's going on now. I think that we have a problem. If you think that we're done with the mass shootings in schools, we're wrong. It's unfortunate, but I think we are going to have more school shootings. And the reason being is that the liberal agenda is do what's good, what feels right, play all the games that are, the war games and with the death and kill, taking prayer out of school, taking prayer and God out of any public meetings or anything else. We are reaping the fruits of the last 30 years of generation of being ultra-liberal and do what you think you want to do and have a good time. So, for every problem, I'm going to come to the board with a solution. I suggest and request that we pass a county ordinance that requires that a school administrator in each school have the training or a designee within that school to carry a concealed weapon permit. And Frontline and up in Reno, Nevada, will provide training free, comprehensive combat close quarter shootings to any school employee with a letter from the school district, or in this case, from the Board of Supervisors. But I think that it's highly unlikely, but it's always like a good Boy Scout to be prepared. And I would like to see us be prepared for a situation, God forbid it arise, that a school administrator or his designee have the training and the authorization to carry a concealed weapon. And further, you can make a no-gun zone area in a school. That's not going to apply to a crazy person. It'll only prohibit the mentally sane people that are competent from carrying a weapon onto a school to protect themselves or protect the children. So a lot of thought needs to be looked at, but I think there's a lot of merit to that and a lot of merit for those teachers that are ex-military or ex-police officers that have that type of training to encourage them to go through the training and set up the processes and safety protocols for that. The Watts riots, I don't know if you've looked at that and studied the history of the Watts riots. In Koreatown, all of the shop store owners were on the top of the roofs protecting their property and their families. And guess what? They had high-capacity carbine rifles, and they killed four intruders. L.A. Police Department could do nothing. With the riots, it fell on yourself and your personal capacity and ability to defend yourself. And there's an exact reasoning why to have a high-capacity, large-caliber rifle to defend yourself. And I hear in the press, oh, you don't need this, you don't need that. Well, I don't trust our government, and I don't know if there was ever riots or anything that came from Sacramento up in this area, but I do have the capacity and ability to defend myself. Let's see, school, Boy Scouts, El Paso, Feinstein. I've hit all the points. I thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other public comment? Morning.
Gentlemen, John Heisenbuttle from Pine Grove.
Morning.
First, want to thank Supervisor Onetto for bringing this up as an agenda item. That's a very important issue to be discussing in light of all the proposals that are starting to fly around. I like the idea of opening up with a generic letter, just stating for the record what the feeling is of this board. Absolutely agree that with Secretary Plass that one of the points that needs to be made is whatever is done, it needs to be thoughtful and pragmatic. And agree with everybody, it's hard to come up with definitives until we start seeing some of the legislation. And as far as the executive orders go, I think that's going to be one of those Nancy Pelosi things where you're not going to see what it is until it's enacted. So we'll have to react to that. As far as being thoughtful and pragmatic, can't just focus on the guns. Needs to be some sort of component addressing the mental health issue, and I've heard you say that. So based on what I've heard today, it sounds like the board's headed in the right direction from my point of view. Thank you.
John? Well, thank you.
I listened to Tom Sullivan had a caller one day, and the caller was in the mental health industry, and it was almost like a nightmare what he was describing, taking some of these people to court. He said it's very easy for a person that's got mental health issues to prove that they don't have mental health issues. Just have to say the right thing. So it's that's the problem on that issue, and probably the same issue they had in Newtown, Connecticut, where you had an individual who wanted to teach her son how to use weapons for his own protection, not realizing that he had some serious issues, or not taking them into full consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Other public comments?
Morning.
Morning.
Paul Molinelli, Sr. I've always been a gun advocate. I've got more in tune with what's going on. I'm the father of a first grade teacher, so it has concern to me. I think our government works best when local government is heard and works its way up. So I think it's important for you all to take a stand. I agree with the comments you've all made, but I believe something ought to come from this Board of Supervisors so we get the system rolling from the bottom up. Whatever I can do to support you, I'd be glad to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Any other public comment? Hearing none. Action?
You know, a little discussion first, if you don't mind. You know, or I guess an ongoing discussion one more. Like, take Mexico. I mean, you know, there's no guns down there. They're supposed to be other than what the government has. And they've got, you know, America. A lot of Americans have stopped going to Mexico because it's too dangerous, too many people are being shot. And they've got probably pretty draconian gun control down there, other than the time when we were when our Department of Justice is under Fast and Furious is allowing assault rifles to go down there en masse, but that's an interesting thought. So we have a Department of Justice that is sanctioning thousands of guns going to Mexico, and we're supposed to have full faith and trust in those people. That's why I like to keep our Second Amendment rights. That way there we are we're free people and we're able to protect ourselves from whatever enemies may come against us. But no, look at Mexico down there. They've got real issues, and they've got all kinds of gun control. My brother has people come up, these are the two Mexican fellas. They've been buying parts from him for probably 15 years or longer, and I talk to them all the time. They tell me what's going on down there. And they said there's some towns down down there that have been just really, really just hammered. One of them was, I guess, there's bad people. They come in, they steal your money, they steal your possessions, they rape your wife, they rape your children, they kill you. And I guess some of the people got mad, finally had enough, and I guess they killed some of the people with, I don't know, with sticks or stones or something. Well, some of the bandidos in, they're saying we came in with guns and killed a whole bunch of the town. And the town's basically defenseless against it. And they have gun control down there, but yet the bad people have guns. And I think if we're not armed, we'll be in the same situation at some point in time where, hey, the bad people are going to either be bigger and strong with knives and clubs or sticks and stones, whatever. And they will have their way with you. You take a small, not physically strong person. Okay, they cannot defend themselves unless they have very good self-defense training, black belts or whatever. But if you give that person a firearm, they're just as strong as the biggest, baddest, dirtiest, nastiest person out there. And that's something else to keep in mind. I mean, if I was a person that was that was incapable to protect myself physically against a person, it'd be nice to have that, a pistol or whatever, saying, hey, leave me alone, I want no trouble. So I guess I'm rambling on a little bit, but just some of the thoughts I have. Also, I thought it was very interesting, I think it was one of the persons spoke about Dianne Feinstein having a concealed weapon. I've heard she does, and if she doesn't, she has armed guards. You look at President Obama going through a parade. Somebody sent me a picture of the day. All the Secret Service people that are around him, guarding him, there's a gun here, gun there, gun here, gun there, gun here, gun there. But yet, we're supposed to have no guns? So I really have a problem with that. And I agree with what Mr. Mulally said. It would be good to take a stance and to be out front saying, this is where we're at. Otherwise, we're going to be trying to play catch-up, trying to fight off legislation as it pours down from whether it's the state or the federal government. So I'd like to be able to take a stance saying, hey, we support the Second Amendment. I do understand Supervisor Boitano would like to be in this conversation, so I would question whether or not does it matter if we take it today or if we have a vote on it at our next meeting when he's here. So I'd like the thoughts of the board, what they see as far as does it matter if we take it, is time that of essence or can we wait a couple weeks?
Well, we could pass the motion today. You could bring it back at a future meeting and have a motion to reconsider only for the purpose, you'd have to have discussion, but primarily for the purpose of having Supervisor Boitano have the opportunity to vote on it. So our board would be on the record today if the board wanted to go that way. The only other option is to hold off until the next meeting.
I'd like to ask Supervisor Onetto a question in regards to the Second Amendment. So are we going to word this letter that we support the Second Amendment, or are we going to word it where we were totally against all the gun rules and regulations that are coming forth with?
No, I think it'd be that we support the Second Amendment. I mean, there may be some things where there is reasonable legislation that is sensible and that doesn't unduly infringe on our rights, where like the person has mental issues. Hey, I have no problem with basically restricting that person's ability to access guns.
Yeah, I mean, I need some clarity here because I got an article here in the paper over the weekend, shows all these firearms, and according to this article, we have this is from the Department Bureau of Firearms. It says we have 33 agents that are considered the arm prohibit person systems. This is who they work for, and they work for the Department of Bureau of Firearms, Department of Justice. And they go out every night and they confiscate firearms, and they confiscate firearms from more or less bad people or mental health issue type people. And, some of these things I think have to be done. So they get the firearms out of the people's hands that should not have firearms, okay? Some of these things. But this 33-man task force, I question in regards to where they get their authority, how they believe in the Second Amendment, how they believe in firearms in good citizens' hands versus in these people's hands that they're going around collecting these firearms. So that's why I needed to ask you that question, sir.
Hasn't that been, Ted, primarily them going on parolees, paroled felons, and anybody that already the law states that they are not allowed to own a firearm and they're confiscating from those people?
It does mention that, but it also mentions a 65-year-old individual that had some mental issues, and so they went after him and took all his firearms too. But I understand those situations.
Right. Are we ready for a motion?
Well, just one comment I'd like to make regarding Mr. Nielsen's point, and that is with regard to this FOIA request or a potential FOIA request that could request that we release the personal information relating to gun possession. It's interesting. I recall something that occurred recently on the marijuana cultivation issue. Many of you were aware of that, read about it in our local papers and so forth. And when we were considering an ordinance that might require that all medicinal marijuana cultivators in Amador County be registered with our Public Works Department and so forth, there was a great outcry about that because, again, you were putting in possession of government the information of those that were legally growing marijuana. Well, it got to be so publicized as to those that were advocates of growing ever-increasing quantities of marijuana in their households that actually one of them was the victim of a home invasion robbery. And they went straight to those people's house, assaulted the woman who answered the door, and told her in no uncertain terms, "We're here for the pot." And that was all because of the publicization of the fact that pot was being grown there. So with regards to a FOIA request that may or may not come in relative to the one that Calaveras has had, I would like to take a stance on that issue as well. Now, maybe it's also early on that, but I'd like any FOIA request that comes regarding the release of personal information relating to gun possession here in Amador County to have to come before this board for a decision as to whether that information is released or not, and not just put it solely on the county council's shoulders.
We can do that. There may, in fact, be case law on this point already, one way or the other. I would expect the sheriff has received in the past requests for at least maybe not our sheriff, but other sheriffs for these concealed carry weapons permits, and so we'd have to look at all of that, and we certainly can bring it to the board.
I just don't want it to fall solely on your responsibility on how to respond to that.
Why don't we, Greg, put that on the next admin committee agenda. We can discuss that and just formalize it so that if we do get a response, we can bring that back to the board and make sure that it will come to the board for action.
Okay.
Back to this issue?
Yeah, it sounds like you have a motion proposed.
Yeah, I think I'd like to make it that we send... I'd like to make it real short and simple. Basically, it would be that we support the Second Amendment as being necessary to the security and freedom of the American people. And that would be it. And I'd like to send a...
Can you restate that as best you can? The Amador County Board of Supervisors supports the Second Amendment...
as being necessary to the security and freedom of the American people. And if anybody would like to expand on that, they're happy to, under discussion. And I'd like to send that letter to all of our state and federal legislators, and also I'd like to send it to probably to Vice President Joseph Biden, and also to the President of the United States, Barack Obama. If anybody would like to expand on that, feel free to, but that would be my motion.
I had something written down, Supervisor Onetto, regarding opposition to any legislation that infringes on the rights as expressed in the Second Amendment. Is that too broad, given this discussion of medical or
It'd probably be too broad, I would think. And you know, it's possible we could probably bring this back if Lewis wants to and have further discussion at some point. Once we've done this, and maybe we could even come out with something a little bit more.
You had Second Amendment as being necessary for the security and freedom of, can we say, of the citizens of Amador County and the nation?
Sure.
Make it specific, a little more specific to Amador County, too, as well as...
That'd be good, Richard, yes.
All right. Any board members have an issue or problem with bringing this back at our next meeting? Rather vote on it today.
I liked your idea of reconsideration.
Voting on it now, and then...
Voting on it now to get on the record as soon as possible, because there may be issues here that are timely in nature. But bring it back under reconsideration to give Supervisor Boitano the opportunity to cast his vote as well.
Well, Greg, let's be clear on this. You have a motion. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second it.
I moved and seconded. If that motion to reconsider can come at the next meeting and it can be discussed at that meeting...
I believe it has to come by the next meeting
and has to be requested by a member of the voting majority.
In the majority.
Okay. Motion by Supervisor Onetto, second by Supervisor Plass. Is everyone clear on the motion?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Any further discussion? Sure. Could you,
whoever's got the final wording, could they reread it so I get a clear understanding?
The Amador County Board of Supervisors supports the Second Amendment as being necessary for the security and freedom of the citizens of Amador County and the nation. Is that correct? Does that work?
You think you have as being necessary for the security or to the security? Or does it really matter? It's wordsmithing.
To the security. I just was trying to write it down real fast.
I think that's a little better.
Necessary to the security and freedom of the citizens. All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries 401. And we'll move on to item 6 on our regular agenda. Kirkwood Out Valley Transmission Line discussion of possible action relative to a presentation by Kirkwood Public Utility District representatives regarding the status of the subject project. Good morning. Good
morning, Michelle.
Well, good morning, Chairman and Supervisors. I appreciate the opportunity to be here before you. My name is Michelle Gamble. I'm with Resource Concepts, and I am the overall project manager for the Kirkwood Meadows PUD Out Valley project. Mike Sharp, district manager, sends his regrets that he was not able to be here today. He was intending to be here, but he had a meeting come up last week and related to the financing of the project, so he felt it important he had to stay in Kirkwood.
Michelle, could you make sure you sign in for the record, too?
Sure.
Before you go, Michelle, I'm going to let Supervisor Novelli just make a quick intro on this because he requested this to be on the agenda.
Michelle and Mike, both with Kirkwood and with the company that's representing Kirkwood in regards to bringing power in, we've had discussions up at our TriTac meeting, and what else have we had discussions? Did we have one down here?
I have not attended a meeting down here, but I've been out and about at other
counties. I think Mike and I might have had a meeting down here. But this is all about bringing power into to Kirkwood. It's going to be one of my concerns is about Bear River Road and coming across Bear River, where it's going to be going underground. And then I know Caltrans has some concerns in regards to going across the road at certain areas and then being buried along the road. So take it from there, Michelle. Thank you.
Perfect. I appreciate that. What I provided is just a real brief handout on some of the highlights of the project. I will say that I've been involved with the project for about a year and a half now. The firm that I work for has been involved for about 2.5 years, and we actually were the lead drafters of the environmental document, the EIS-EIR, that was associated with this project. In general, this is a power line project that will bring power in from the grid at Salt Springs, essentially coming up overhead, adjacent to the existing 12 kV line that comes up from Salt Springs down to Bear River Reservoir. And then the power line would go underground from that point all the way up Bear River Reservoir and then into Kirkwood. Kirkwood right now is currently receives a power from diesel-fired generators. So what this would do is it would take those generators offline. Those generators would remain in place as a backup in case there were ever any issues with the power line. The power line, current power line, is designed to meet the Kirkwood specific plan and Mountain Meadow or Mountain Plan ultimate outbuild. So it hasn't been designed to provide power service to others along the route. It is designed specifically to meet the power demands of Kirkwood Meadows PUD.
Was that a request of Kirkwood PUD, Amador County, or environmental concerns?
That came out of the environmental concerns. That was actually one of the CEQA compliance measures that came out of the project. There was a significant amount of concern raised in the environmental documentation of the project that this project would be growth inducing, and so there was actually a mitigation measure one that was written in. It's the only mitigation measure that's actually written into the EIS-EIR, which states that a couple different issues. It's not as cut and dry, I guess, as everybody likes to think, but Kirkwood can only provide power to areas within its district, and Kirkwood's power district is very small. It's the Kirkwood Meadows area, not immediately adjacent across the highway area. Mitigation Measure 1 says that Kirkwood will not be providing power to areas, to residents outside of their power service area. However, there is the ability, if there is an existing development, and I'm going to use the Caltrans Peddler Hill Maintenance Facility as an example. There's an existing development. If Caltrans goes to PG&E and goes to LAFCO and gets all the approvals and gets their environmental documents, and with the approval of both PG&E and Kirkwood, there is a potential that they could be served. And we've actually, in part of our negotiations with Caltrans, is we have, the district has made that commitment to Caltrans that if they go through and get all of those other permit approvals, that they would provide power. The amount of power that Caltrans Peddler Hill Maintenance Facility requires is so minimal that it would not impact the district's ability to provide power to their residents. So, yes, there is the ability to provide power to others along the way, but it's out of the district's, the initiation of that is out of the district's control, and there are a number of hurdles and hoops that would have to be addressed prior to that, and then the district would ultimately have to concur with that. Did that answer your question in a long-winded way?
Well, it does. I would have, and I know I'm very late to the game, I would have hoped that some sort of joint project between PG&E and Kirkwood PUD could have resulted from this so that PG&E could serve customers along that route. To use the excuse that we're going to cap the size of this line to that size that will only supply Kirkwood at full build-out because otherwise it might be growth-inducing and therefore it's a CEQA issue, ignores the fact that it could be a CEQA air quality mitigation issue by virtue of eliminating the, dare I say, close to 100 generators in and around Silver Lake at all the private residences around Silver Lake generating all types of emissions issues. So hypocrisy, once again, is rampant in the CEQA process and the effects of that. But we're late to the game at this point.
Michelle, let me ask you a question. Wasn't one of the main issues, too, was the cost to reduce that power? I mean, so...
Yeah, you got substation issues.
Yeah, you'd... I mean, and I don't know, like, at one of the meetings, Caltrans didn't want to pay that high cost to reduce it, to go to Peddler Hill. So I don't know who would bear that cost if Caltrans doesn't want to bear that cost, but yet still bring power to certain entities along that route. I don't know who would be standing up, raising their hand, saying, we'll take on that big, high cost. That was one of the issues I know Caltrans
had. Kirkwood customers are right now.
Well,
taking on a heck of a cost to bring this power all the way to Kirkwood.
Right.
A clustering of development such as is around Silver Lake, both at the north and south ends, mm-hmm. could certainly spread the cost of a substation out over a great enough number of clients that it would reduce it down. But
I don't think it was PG&E's idea to bring it to Kirkwood. I think it was Kirkwood taking lead, bringing it to Kirkwood.
Right.
And I believe that we have one electricity company out of Nevada was looking at it also.
Correct. As a part of the environmental documentation of the project, I mean, Kirkwood would have loved it had PG&E said, yes, we're willing to, you know,
joint
power.
Project.
Yeah, and to have a joint project. We were talking with previously NV Energy and then Liberty Energy about bringing power in from South Lake Tahoe, bringing it in from the Minden area. We looked at a variety of different routes, and it was just not of interest to those other power companies to want to participate in the project. Now, we do have PG&E as a participant in this project because we are connecting to their transmission line. The first portion of the power line, the first about a mile, 1.3 miles, is going to be a 115 kV line that actually goes to a new substation between Salt Springs and Lower Bear River Reservoir, and that's where the district's actual ownership will take place. The district is going to, they're designing and they will build that 115, but they will deed that back to PG&E. So we're having to go through the PG&E process. A portion of the power line does fall within the FERC boundary, so we're having to, all of our FERC submittals and our CPUC submittals have to be done through PG&E as well. So we have this cooperative effort with PG&E going. I know that's not a satisfactory answer, but that's kind of where we are.
I realize that we are where we are at. So, thank you.
The project winds its way through three different counties, both Alpine, Amador, and El Dorado County. And so we've had an extensive amount of cooperation with these three counties, in addition to our cooperation and our coordination with Caltrans, with the Forest Service. We have to get a special use permit. And so we've been out there meeting with agencies for, you know, 3.5 years on this project, longer for the district, and that's, you know, pretty much our involvement. I will say that as a part of this project, the environmental impact of building a power line over a 28-mile line corridor was of paramount concern. And that's why when we get to Bear River Reservoir, where the existing 12 kV overhead line goes under or ceases, that's where the decision was made to take our new power line and put it underground. And so we go underground from Lower Bear River Reservoir all the way up Bear River Road to Highway 88 and then in. It's not the cheapest way to build a power line. It's pretty expensive to do that. You all have driven Highway 88, and so you know that we don't have nice loamy soils that we're dealing with as we cross over the mountains. We're dealing with a lot of rock. So it's going to be an expensive endeavor. We're currently negotiating with Caltrans regarding the trench depth. We wanted a shallower trench, they want a deeper trench, and we're trying to meet somewhere in the middle on that. So we're optimistic that's our last issue with Caltrans, and that's going to be resolved hopefully within the next week or so.
Are they requesting 4 feet?
They were requesting 42 inches depth of
42
cover.
42 inches?
Right.
And what are you guys requesting?
We had requested a 24-inch total trench depth, which is about a 16-inch depth of cover, which meets the mitigation requirements that the CPUC has for shallow trench depths. Right now we're looking at a 24-inch depth of cover, and what that does is that gets us out of Caltrans' structural section between their asphalt and their ag base on their road. And so we think that that's a nice meeting point. And I think we've been dealing with both District 10 and with headquarters, and I'm confident right now that we're going to come to that agreement. We do have to get a longitudinal encroachment from Caltrans. Those are not easy to get. They don't like for people to put longitudinal utilities in their rights of way. We have about 7.5 miles where we're in the Caltrans right-of-way, either on the far edge of the right-of-way, on the road shoulder, and then we have some areas along 88 where we have no other location but to put it right in the paved road shoulder, essentially just right on the edge line. So those are some issues that, Caltrans has been very cooperative with us in, dealing with. So we're, like I said, I've been talking with Caltrans for about a year and a half now, and we're very close. So.
Do you have any opportunity to use the existing right-of-way of Volcano Telephone in some of those more difficult-to-excavate sections?
We are, and actually we have certain areas we've been coordinating with Volcano. We have areas where Volcano is in the prime spot because that was the best spot to build. And so we will be going through and we will be co-locating our power line with them in their trench. And we have other areas where Volcano would like to come into our trench, and so we're negotiating that at this point with them. And then we have some areas where Volcano has gone through some culturally sensitive areas, and the Forest Service, through approvals, it wasn't like they did something wrong. I don't want that to come across wrong. They had approval to do that. The Forest Service would like them to now move out of those areas and come into our trench. So we're coordinating with them on that as well. So.
Well, if they went through, I mean, never mind.
It has to do with the long-term maintenance. So that's, and this is a kind of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. If we can get them out of those areas and bring them into our trench, it makes it easier for everybody involved in the long-term maintenance of the power line.
You know, question for you. You're talking about going up Bear River Road?
Yes.
That's maintained by the county?
Yes.
And you're looking at having, 2 feet of fill covered?
Correct.
That's not too much, really, if he's doing work alongside a road. Are you going to be grouting those lines or doing something to where somebody's in there digging? They know they're getting close.
Yes, and actually, I met with your public works director at the TriTech meeting, and then last week I actually came down here and I met with Roger Stewart and Bobby Worm, dropped off our encroachment permit and went through the plans in detail with them, and I'm going to meet with them after I leave here as well. One of the things that Supervisor Novelli had talked about at the TriTech meeting was what sort of markers can we put when we're under pavement, because typically when a utility is beneath a road, you don't know that it's there. Your road crew may not know that it's there if they didn't do a USA Digs call. So what we've done is we've actually specified in the plans that there will be, it's called an ATAG system, and they're markers, they're utility markers that are actually embedded in the pavement, and they're recessed so they don't get taken out by snowplows. I provided that information to your Public Works Department for consideration to see if that meets their needs. And so that's one of the things we're going to be discussing. They've had some time to look at it and think about it and see whether that is meets their concern, because they did have that very same concern.
Yeah, I would think Public Works would probably take care of all the details, but I'd be kind of curious, are you going on the shoulder? It sounds like you're going on the pavement.
Where we can be out of the pavement, we will be out of the pavement. Unfortunately, coming up Bear River Road, there aren't a lot of opportunities for us to be outside of the pavement. We're going to be in the paved shoulder where we can, outside of the paved shoulder where we can.
We'll not be on the ditch side.
No.
On our culvert side, it'll be on the opposite side. It'll be on the dirt side. I call it the dirt side because we have ditches and culverts on our ditch side.
Okay.
So we're going to be off of that. And any damage done to the road, they're going to have to bear the cost of it.
Yeah, because that road's really...
That's a nice
it's
road.
Not, it's not that old road. I want to say it's probably 15 years old, maybe.
Correct.
And are we deferring, as Amador County, maybe this is a question for Public Works, but are we deferring to this negotiated agreement with Caltrans as to depth of cover, or are we requiring our typical depth of cover that is required in Amador County on our roads, i.e. Bear River Road?
Roger,
you can't answer from the back of the room.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors. Roger Stewart with Department of Transportation and Public Works. Our standard road trench section is deeper than what they are proposing. However, what they are proposing is to provide a slurry, which when that's done, we can reduce the depth of cover.
So it's actually grouted or concrete slurry?
It would actually be, I believe it was a 3-sack concrete mix.
Another question, is there any existing utilities on that road now? Phone, whatever?
There's... I don't believe that there is, not that I'm aware of.
Now, I'd like to see Kirkwood get power. I'm just thinking probably somewhere a long ways down the road you have to replace culverts, probably make it a little bit harder job, wouldn't it?
Yes, if the line is in a place where it has to go over a culvert, then it would be a little more difficult than if the line were to go under the culvert.
Where the line does cross the road, they're going to repave it. Where they take it from the left side of the Bear River Road over to the right to cross.
That's correct. Or if it's going to have to go inside of the roadway itself, we're looking at a placement of where it's either right on the very edge of the pavement or it's in between where the tire tracks would be, and we would be looking for or asking for a half-width overlay so that there would not be any surface seams in that lane.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you.
Roger.
Michelle, why don't you try and finish your presentation?
I'll just be really quick. The Highway 88 is a scenic corridor, and so that was taken into consideration as we were moving forward with this project, making sure that we minimize the visual impact. I've included some simulations, the view from Peddler Hill Vista Point. That was a kind of a hotbed issue when we were presenting the environmental document, and so I wanted to make sure that, you know, you were aware of what it looks like with existing conditions and then what our simulation would be. We are going to have a slightly wider corridor for the power line coming down that is visible from Highway 88. We are using the non-reflective cable on the poles, the non-reflective paint on the poles, doing what we can to minimize the visual impacts to that. All of the design criteria and all of the environmental issues were actually written into the plans, and so the not only is that stated specifically in the environmental document, it's stated on the plans, and the contractor will have to abide by all of those environmental constraints and restrictions. The permanent features associated with this are minimal. We have sectionalizing cabinets every so many thousands of feet where they have to splice the cable together. We have underground vaults where we can't fit a sectionalizing cabinet in. Any place that the sectionalizing cabinet would be visible from a scenic corridor, i.e. Bear River Road or State Route 88. They are screened. That means we use boulders to visually screen them from the road. They're not screened completely. We do have to have a clear corridor in front of the cabinet to allow for maintenance, but as a vehicle is approaching it from either side, they would see boulders as opposed to the cabinets. Cabinets will also be painted dark brown to kind of blend in with the darkness of the forest. Permitting, as I indicated, in spring of 2012, we received our final NEPA and CEQA document. We've been having ongoing coordination with the El Dorado National Forest, PG&E, FERC, CPUC, and then all of the other local and state organizations that have jurisdiction as well, Central Valley Regional Water Quality Board, Amador County, Alpine County, El Dorado County for fugitive dust, a plethora of permits that we're working on. Our current schedule right now, we're in the agency review of the plans phase. We're anticipating going to bid in March of 2013 with board approval by the district in April of 2013, and we'd like to start construction in May or June of 2013, depending on weather conditions and our FERC approval. The district is anticipating the project being complete in November of 2014. And so with that, I'd like to open it up for any additional questions.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Any public comment at this time? Supervisor, where do you want to go with this? Just monitor it?
Yeah, I'd like to, if it's okay with the board and the chairman, I'd like to monitor this, and I'd like to have either Michael Sharp or Michelle keep us informed on what's going on, especially me, being it's in my area. And also, too, just remember the markings where everything is and where it has to be marked. And good luck on your project.
Thank you very much. And I will be back to give you guys periodic updates. So thank
Buy
you.
Lots of carbide bits when you're between Tragedy and Silver Lake Reservoir.
We're not going to hit any rocks.
Carbide bits?
Thank you very much.
You mean plastics?
Dynamite. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Michelle.
Next item, item 7, the minutes of December 18th. Those are being held over to our next meeting. With that, we have a 10:30 public hearing. I believe we could take care of at least a couple items in closed session. So why don't we, at this time, the board will go into closed session and be back at 10:30 for our public hearing.
Ha, 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 ha.